Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this 3rd of July. It's very nice to have you with us and to have you join us on this weird quasi-holiday weekend. Some people have it off, some people don't have it off.
It's like a hump day for July 4th.
It is. It's weird. It is strange. But we are here and we couldn't be more delighted to be with you, and that is exciting. So we will get down to business and talk about all the good stuff that we have to talk about. And when I say good stuff, I mean meaty topics, not that really any of it's all that great.
So for all of you listening on New Jersey beaches.
Yeah, right. Well, we're going to get into that story, too. That's quite a story. Okay, Libby Post is with us. It's Monday, so Libby is here. Good morning. We missed you last week. Thank you for being here this week.
Chicago was great.
My kind of town.
It was really. We had a great time, and the American Libraries Association conference was really good. So.
Congratulations.
Thank you. No, we. I had made our plan, so we had left. But I did get elected to a national board.
Congratulations!
A group called United for Libraries, which represents all the trustees, friends, and foundations.
Could not be in better hands.
I'm not the president, but yes, it's
just
it's,
give it time, Libby. Yeah. You'll be taking that over in no time. Promise.
But it's a great group, and I'm very proud and very thankful
and honored.
I'm sure.
Right. Well, we're honored to have you here, as always. Teresa Bourgeois is with us. She is a communications consultant. She is a regular panelist on this program, and for that, we could not be more grateful and happy. So, good morning. How are you?
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you very much.
Happy 4th of July. Happy weekend, whatever this is.
I stayed off Twitter for a little while, and oh my goodness.
Yeah, you can't stay off too long.
See what happens?
Oh my goodness.
And Alan Chartok, good morning. We missed you Friday, but it's a delight to see you today.
We were down at Lambertville, New Jersey, visiting with little Hannah Camille, who is our new granddaughter, and it was really quite something. I swore I wouldn't cry. I looked down, and I just studied her face, much like you're studying a fire. You know, you just look. You just can't look away. And all of a sudden, I found myself getting a little wet around the eyes.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
But
last night we went. We've been busy tanglewooding all weekend, but last night we went to hear the magnificent Natalie Merchant. And she got a nice crowd, and they love her. They just love her. And, and there's a lot to love there. She is grace. She's just a graceful. She dances. She sings. She's surrounded by a wonderful group of instrumentalists. Couldn't have been a better night.
That's terrific. And nice, somewhat nice. Oh, no, I guess it was a little rainy over here.
It rained like you know what.
Like the devil.
Cats and dogs.
It rained like the thing. And she was very nice about people. And she said, I don't want to paraphrase it, but she said, you know, I feel badly that you're all getting wet, but I feel good that we still have rain.
That's a good way to put it.
Sure. Right. And then the night before, we were at Tanglewood. Now, Emmylou Harris was opening for John Mellencamp.
She got opened for by the cash.
Carlene Carter.
Carlene Carter.
Somebody opened for the opening for the act.
Well, yeah. I hate to think of Emmylou opening for anybody because Emmylou happens to be one of my great heroes, better than anybody I know. And Mellencamp, that's a little different.
Yeah, so what happened was you could see like the half the crowd was there for, I'm probably over estimating.
No, it was more than half for
Emmylou and half
for Mellencamp. It really was a culture shock kind of thing. No, it really wasn't, because when Mellencamp came on, the place just erupted. And you could hear the difference.
Oh, he's great.
Now, you know, she came out and sang with him for a couple
of course she did.
Yeah, a couple of numbers, and that was great. And Carlene Carter, and it was a lovely evening. It was beautiful, and getting home was a pain because all the roads were shut down. But other than that, it was had some flooding in our all over our region here in the WMC listening area, but which we have, of course, been reporting on. Well, let's get to what is happening today. Just a reminder, we won't be here tomorrow, so we're taking the holiday off, but we will be back on Wednesday.
Yes,
Station will be here on Friday,
right?
Yes, sir.
Friday, we'll all be at our wonderful Camp Tanglewood, which we love
Camp
every
Tanglewood.
year. We do love that. And, you know, it is such a joy. And they bring out all of the greats and the near greats and the great greats. And we talk to them and we have a great time.
And then you come out, right? So
we have a time. Well, I don't reach that.
Well, we
like
have
that
a
level.
We have a fun. It's a good time. And Alan's right. It's just, it's like it's
our, like when you go to camp.
It's like a pilgrimage.
And you go to the bunk for the first time in camp, and there's a certain sort of woody smell to the press place where we broadcast
the press
from.
Port.
It's wonderful.
It's pretty great, and we'll be there on Friday morning, and we're looking forward to that. Okay, so let's get to what else is happening in our world, and. I've been debating this pretty much all over the last 24 hours or so as to whether we should talk about the or at least start talking about the Trump – start off our conversation by talking about the Trump video that he put out on Sunday morning in which he wrestles CNN. And it was a stock tape that they – that was taken – when he was a part of WrestleMania and was going after Vince McMahon, someone had taken Vince McMahon's face and superimposed the CNN logo over on top of his face. Well, we find out now it was from an anti-Semitic group that
why aren't we surprised?
That had originally put this together and apparently came to the president's attention, and then but it wasn't even a retweet because he put it under not only his account but also the official White House account.
Well, do you remember the name of the group or who the group was?
I can tell you. It wasn't a group. I think
Reddit.
It was a person. Yeah, it, well, she got they Reddit. Got it off Reddit, and it was the other person had been
and what's
had
Reddit
a history.
Again?
Reddit is a
it's a social media, but more like an RSS.
Aggregator.
An aggregator of.
Oh yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
And
conversation.
So, and then the person who had put it up apparently had this history of anti-Semitic tweets and so forth. So it was concerning on that front, but also the larger issue of the press and the fact that on the day or in the days before a major trip to the G20 summit that this is what the president was working on a Sunday morning.
But, you know, Tom Price said he can do more than two things
at
once.
He can walk
and
chew gum
at the same
time.
Right. Yeah, I know. We're not sure about that.
Generous.
You know, a lot of people have been kidding around about this president. I'm getting tons of email to the panel and jokes. You've seen them, Joe. But they're not funny. I think when a guy does this kind of stuff, it's not funny. He's teaching our children how to bully, for example.
Mm-hmm.
He's teaching our children how to fight and why to fight. He is catering to the, how do I put this without getting into Hillary country, into the lowest possible common denominator of folks in this country and who he knows will respond to it. You know, at the concert, Joe, I'm sure you caught it. Maybe there was the Carlene Carter,
yes.
Who was June Carter's daughter, came out and says, "Hi, all. You know, I'm just a hillbilly, just like you," or something like that. And of course, she got muted applause, but people didn't. She thought she would play to that instinct, but it didn't work.
Yeah, but
I
she
think
didn't
he thinks,
know her audience. Clearly.
That's right, and I don't think he does either.
Well, I think he thinks that 30-35% that are still solidly with him is the country, and that he doesn't have to worry about anybody else, and that he has the power, and that's it, and so that he can do.
He said, "I'm the president." They're
not. Right, right. I'm the president. They're not tough noogies, and I'm going to do whatever it is that I want to do without regard to anything. And it's a very Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake, kind of
even
way
if she
of
didn't
governing.
Say it. Yeah.
But we saw it this weekend too with Chris Christie going to the beach. I mean, it was the same thing. They lie. They think they can get away with it. Doesn't really matter what they say. We prove them wrong. Oh, I didn't say that.
Okay,
it's
so
very gaslight.
If I could, just before Teresa gets into this, I keep thinking about this business about the 38% that got him elected, and his theory that 38% will get him elected again.
Yeah.
The reason I don't think that's true is that 50% of the people didn't vote. And when those people, like Ferdinand Abel, you remember, he was just sitting there smelling the flowers until that bee came along and buzzed him in the hiney. You remember that? And then he took off. I think that 50% is going to see a very good reason to get energized right now.
Right. I think that, just on the tweet itself, I tweeted, you know, what would Representative Scalise and his family think about this? Is it going to take somebody in the media getting attacked for him to realize how dangerous, you know, he's really playing with fire? And, you know, we certainly hope that no one does. It would be tragic. But that's a real worry. I mean, they were talking about how a number of people in the media now have to have private security because of the kinds of things that, you know, he said and done. But I think particularly in advance of tomorrow, this reminds us about democracy and that it's not a sure thing. And that, this might sound hokey, but we have to constantly work to preserve it. And that the office of the president, while he can do whatever he wants, this is beyond beneath the office of the presidency. And he's really denigrating the office of the presidency in a very dangerous way. And people say, well, he has to be able to tweet so he can talk directly to the people. Well, he can tweet and talk directly to the people. It's not that he tweets, it's what he tweets. And it's really, I think that it's going to require people to be much more engaged in the fight for our democracy than we have been.
In his defense of this, he was saying that this was modern presidential. That's what he said over the weekend, that this was modern presidential. And so that does bring us to a point of, okay, but what is fit for the office and what isn't? And as I heard one commentator say, the tweets of Mika, the tweets about the wrestling match and so forth, those will undoubtedly go into the Library of Congress. So there is that. I mean, it's an official White House response, and
look, as much as some of us didn't like George Bush, okay, because of his politics, you know, he acted presidential. I remember he respected the office. That 9/11 speech he gave was incredibly moving. It was the best speech of his presidency. But he was a leader, you know. He respected the office. This man doesn't understand what this office is. He doesn't respect it. And the idea of, oh, he has to talk to his people through tweets. What about talking to the people through the way most presidents do? Get up and do a speech that makes sense. Get up and do a press conference. Get up and do an address.
Well, Libby, he thinks that, to be fair, or to be unfair, he thinks that this is very presidential. You know, I keep thinking that if one child on a bus gets beaten up because of this guy, this ogre, if one person gets killed.
It's already happened.
Yeah, if one person gets killed because of this guy and his utterances, and that this is the style that we Americans want to have, it's just way, way too much.
He incited violence at his rally.
Yes, he did. And now he's off to visit with Putin, another beautiful man whose enemies seem to disappear one way or the other, and there is and on everybody's mind when the two of them are alone, what Putin will say to Trump about what he knows about Trump and his dealings with the Russian oligarchs. You know, to me, this is the road to impeachment. And frankly, I think it's the only one. It's not for doing all this harm that he's doing. It's for getting him on, you know, an impeachable offense.
One of the things that has also come out over the last several days is this idea of the wrestling that I think the media of the country is having on how much to take these tweets seriously. We talked on Thursday and Friday on this show as to, because we got a lot of letters from people saying you're being distracted, there's other things that are going on, you shouldn't talk about this. But it does seem as though the story is that if this is the main the main focal point of this president and of this administration, that questioning that and having a discussion as to why that is, and I think subsequently also having discussions as to what is not being a part of what we're talking about, is valid and should be discussed, because it is concerning. I know a lot of people, I think, over the weekend have, you know, pushed it aside and said, those people defending the president, saying that, well, this is just a joke. I mean, it's clearly a joke. Why can't you take it as a joke?
Why should we?
Well, I don't know that it comes off as a joke.
Well, you know, Joe, I think there's great wisdom in what you just said. As a political scientist, I know I've taught my students over the years, everybody's sick of hearing it, that politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources.
I'm actually not sick of hearing that.
But his, and I think your point is well taken, that his resorting to this has to be dealt with. Mm-hmm. The fact that he is doing this, that he is getting away with it, that it is distracting, it shows that this is the kind of, I don't want to use the word cunning, but the kind of approach that this guy is taking.
Well, you know, George Lakoff, who's a linguist who works with progressive politics, it was very clear in a piece I read this morning that Trump knows exactly what he's doing in terms of being able to distract and so that other things are happening. You want to stop?
Well, I want to stop. I want to take a break. But I was thinking about this a lot over the weekend. I think I owe Alan an apology. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about other good stuff coming up. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And we will continue with Alan and Teresa and Libby after this short break. Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday morning, the 3rd of July. And Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post make up the group this morning. And again, we are thrilled to have you with us. Panel at WAMC.org. We have letters, and Alan will read a few of those now, and then we'll move on to other stuff.
Right. To the panel, how does this promote violence? If it does so, WWE, and so does the WWE, and there's a silence about it. It's just entertainment. The WWE and Ramon, who wrote this letter, is comparing the WWE with the president of the United States. It is just entertainment. Why are so many getting their jammies in a bunch? Follow past and common rule axiom on this. If you don't like some Twitter or other social media, simply do not visit it. Well, of the United States,
right? There's
Ramon.
A difference here.
And
what
again,
is
on his,
you want
on
if
his
I did it,
personal feed, on his personal feed, and the government feed.
Right. If he were an employee, he would be. He would have a letter in his file. And it would be, you know, part of a grounds
right.
for dismissal.
And then Ramon, who I'm sure is trying to get my goat, our goat, succeeded. Just stay in your echo chamber, he says. Easy enough. The reaction into simple entertainment is laughably juvenile. And that's from Ramon in Montgomery. Well, and Ramon, I read it, but I don't like it.
I don't understand the argument of how the fact that now, with that said, I mean, I was watching CNN yesterday, and to use Ramon's term, you know, getting their jammies in a bunch. I mean, there was a point where they were, you know, talking about how this would lead to death of a reporter and so forth. And while that is all completely possible, you know, I do think we do have to take it in somewhat wider. However, the point of the president of the United States doing this, and especially after, and this is why when I went to break, I was saying I owed Alan an apology, because we were having a discussion on Thursday where we were talking about the Mika and Joe Scarborough tweet, and I said, it just doesn't seem to me that he just has any impulse. There's no thought behind it. And Alan was saying that he's crazy like a fox, you know, that he does. There is thought behind it. And I think over the weekend this showed that there was great thought.
I don't like
behind
it,
behind it,
but I do think he thinks it through.
Yeah.
He's convinced he got here by following this program, and that if he continues to, his success will continue. Mm-hmm. That's what he's convinced of.
And I'm sorry, Teresa, but and just because I want you to, I'm hoping you'll respond to this too, because we kept on talking about in his tweets over the weekend, since the Mika and Joe tweet, he has tweeted at least three times, but maybe five times, he has tweeted about, okay, there's presidential and there's modern presidential, but this is what my base wants. And he's used that term three times about his base, of being the president for the for his base as opposed to a president for everybody.
Right. Which he announced on day one he was going to be for everybody.
Well, that was the...
That was then, this is now.
That was the...
Looking at, Mike says, looking back at Donald Trump's tweets against the Morning Joe host and then the video of Trump beating up a person with a CNN logo on it, I'm reminded of a scene from the musical Peter Pan, I Won't Grow Up. One wonders if he ever will, sad. I think it goes beyond sad, to be honest with you. I think it gets into the from sad to dangerous,
scary.
Really dangerous.
I think that it's got to be taken in the context of, you know, a year and a half, what is it, almost 2 years of his actions now. Think about doing his political rallies when they literally penned in the press. It's not unusual that the press is penned in. They always give him a prime spot where the camera angles are good. That's not all. It'll keep him in one spot so they can move him quickly. But not that he penned them in. But then once penned in, he turned the focus of the crowd onto them. Mm-hmm. In very antagonistic ways. And that, you know, again, tomorrow, 4th of July, Independence Day, time to reflect on our democracy. Having a free press is fundamental to the strength of our democracy. Like it or not, it's fundamental. And one of his tactics now for well over a year is to try to discredit the legitimacy of one of the foundations of our democracy, which is the press itself. And so I think it's dangerous for people's individual safety, but it's dangerous chipping away at our democracy. That's what worries me so much.
Hi, panel. What do you think about Stephen Colbert's running for president? He could be a formidable candidate if he could broaden his appeal. It would be very hard for Trump to pin a derogatory label on him that sticks, given his intellectual, forensic, and comedic attributes. Wrong. I'm so sorry, Jay, but wrong. This guy, Trump, will put a label on anybody. He will make something up. He's tall, short, crazy, you know, wicked. And he will do that. And for his group, it'll stick.
Why don't we move away, and this is just my opinion, but wouldn't it be nice if we moved away from perhaps the celebrity and got someone who can actually govern?
Well, that's, or, no, no.
That's so, Colbert's
or,
point,
or win. You say actually govern, but before you govern, you got to win.
I understand you have to win.
But it's
and I have
true.
Nothing against Stephen Colbert, who I love, but and he's not seriously running for president, and that's fine.
I think he's trying to show that
anybody
can
run, or that you. You know, it's a comedic way of discussing the fact that you need qualifications to actually govern, which he knows he doesn't have.
I will point out that Al Franken is the senator from Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
But he's
a senator, and he also got elected, and he's also done really good work.
Absolutely, I'm not denying that for a second.
So
Reagan was an actor.
I mean, you know, the thing is that Trump. This is a game for him. This is a how much more attention will people pay to me game. He does not know how to govern. He does not understand the presidency. He sees this as I'm in business. I tell people what to do. He's taking that to government, and it does not work.
Well, wait a second, Libby. It does work. He's the president.
I get that he's the president, but look how stymied we are in getting anything accomplished. He hasn't been able to do anything other than Gorsuch and his executive orders. There hasn't been any... Healthcare is dead.
I disagree with you. I think that he's gotten a lot accomplished that we're not focusing on. And I think this is where Steve Bannon has been very, in Miller in the background, incredibly effective. with using their time to stay in the background, because what he has got accomplished is at the, think about the Department of Health and Human Services, mm-hmm. their executive orders that have resulted in collapsing the Affordable Care Act. Think about the changes, that the dramatic changes that are underway at the EPA
exactly.
that will have a generational impact on our environment. Think about the fact that at the State Department, just the mere fact of not putting people in those jobs and not allowing money to flow. So things like World for Peace, we're not responding to the global cholera outbreak. We're not responding, you know, we don't have the resources or the wherewithal to respond to these outbreaks that will definitely come back and haunt us personally. So in a way, one thing that really struck me this weekend, he gave a speech Saturday night at the Kennedy Center that mm-hmm. was just stunning. And what really struck me is that he was reading that speech. Someone wrote that speech. He was not going off script. So some of this is a active, orchestrated effort, collective effort within the White House, not just him going
right.
off.
I don't disagree with you. I think that there's been a lot of damage done. But when you look at the legislative process, he's not using the legislative process. He's using executive fiat to get
stuff
done.
Well, that's what's chipping away at the structures
of our
government.
That's right. It is.
Because he doesn't know how to govern, but in that process, he's getting things done in a way that mm-hmm. it is chipping away at how our structures work. It's chipping away at how our legislative process works, how our democracy works. It's really dangerous.
It's the step towards authoritarianism that we've all.
But the flip side of it is, it really, as you've talked about, it has engaged a whole group of people in our democratic process in mm-hmm. ways that they've not been involved before. And I'd love to have some of our listeners write in and maybe talk about how they've been engaged in a way. You know, what are some of the things that they've done
have
been different?
Right, and some of the ads are extraordinary. The ads, so I don't mean ads, some of the stories in the newspapers are extraordinary. You interview, the Times interviews a lady in a wheelchair who has MS, and what this is going to mean to her, or a child who has asthma, and
Medicaid,
yeah,
yes.
and what this means. Boy, I am so respectful of what you've just said, Teresa, because I think you're exactly right. Look, he's a Republican. He's a reactionary. There's no question about it. People will write and say he's no real Republican. Yeah, he's a Republican. He's with Mitch McConnell.
Well, he's carrying water for the Republicans.
Yeah, yeah, right. And he's doing all of this stuff. Only he's going a little further than they did.
Steve Bannon territory.
Yeah.
Well, it's the deep state and destroying government. That's what they want to do.
And
Jack doesn't like what we've done and said here. While I do not disagree with much of what you're saying yet again this morning, must you drone on and on and on about the same old garbage from our fearless leader? Parenthesis gives the phrase a whole new flavor, I must admit. Give it a break occasionally. Thank goodness for a holiday from this obsession of the panelists on the 4th. And that's from Jack. I want to respond to you, Jack, in an angry way. I want you to know, I think this is a very foolish letter from you. Foolish is the word I want to use, because there were times in history when people could have stood up to something like what is developing. Libby used the term authoritarianism in this country, dictatorship, or the kind of thing where just one decision to let this earth burn up and to pull from the Paris mm-hmm. Accords and to do all of that, just one decision merits throwing this guy out of office, as far as I'm concerned. So when you say you drone on and on and on this, let me tell you, there were a lot of people who should have been droning on a lot more during the rise of Hitler than have done it. I'm just going to say that.
No, it's true.
Teresa?
Well, I struggle with the same issue. In fact, said to Joe before we started, can we talk about democracy and what people have done and be upbeat a little bit rather. But the fact is, and then I go back and think about, and Joe said no. but I was back and forth on it, because I did this speech that I watched that Trump gave on Saturday night was really deeply concerning. It was some of the things he said, the way he was rallying people, and these tweets in the context of all the other things that he's done. If we really care about this democracy, and it's great that people have become more engaged, but they have to stay engaged and even be more.
That's
more
right.
So.
And
more
if you
so.
Have, a, I mean, you have a story that is above the fold in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Boston Globe, right. which is these tweets. How do you not talk about it? I mean, how do you mm-hmm. dismiss it? Because it is serious. I mean, I understand that it is it's frivolous when you compare it to healthcare and the child with asthma and the
MS lady
and the situation in Syria and so forth. Got it. I understand. However, this is the president of the United States.
And who's guiding all of this stuff.
And that's the issue. He's the president. And it's we talk about patriotism, we talk about tomorrow, and what we've all been taught, and we all think of what the president should be, and this is not it.
There was
I think we're getting to the Fourth Reich is what we're getting to, right. if he is not checked, and that's what you were saying, Alan. I mean, there are people who are just going along with what he's saying. Thankfully, it's not the overwhelming majority of the country. However, lots of us are doing grassroots organizing and getting people engaged. But then, are we going to eat our young? When it comes
exactly.
to 2018 and 2020, if we're not pure enough, if the candidates aren't pure enough.
But Libby, what about women in this country? Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, here I have this beautiful little granddaughter now.
So beautiful. He shared photos.
And I'm just trying to think what this world is going to be like. Is it a world that is going to be burning up? Is it a world where she can't be educated fairly? Is it a world where the environment is just thrown to the wolves?
It might very well be.
Yes, if this guy has his way.
That's right.
And so when Ramon writes or these people write, they're entitled to their say, and we will read their letters. Unlike other people, we read those letters, but we will react to them.
Unlike other people, we actually read.
And, you know, the other thing as we focus on our July 4th and democracy is this notion of this collection of data from all of the various state election departments and this that the
yeah, we talked about this on Friday.
You know, it's just,
22 states now, I believe.
No.
Texas has said yes.
I think North Carolina is sending it.
This is the collection of election data that the administration's committee on the integrity of voting.
Right. And of course, which Texas has said yes. Sure. It's the same Texas which wiped out its entire Democratic or most of its Democratic congressmen right. by gerrymandering.
Right.
Yes, and stopping people from voting.
Right.
Come on, what do you think this is about?
The thing is that this information is available.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you can get this information. It's not like it's not there. But the voter files does not have the last four, at least in New York, does not have the last four numbers of your Social Security number.
But they're asking for non-public information as well, right?
Well, that's what Libby's saying.
It's the Social Security number. So if a voter file doesn't necessarily have the Social Security numbers, you know, There has to be some kind of match done. But above and beyond that, what do they need it for?
Right.
We're desperately late for a break.
Go ahead, take a break.
So we'll take a break and we'll come back because I want to tie this story in also to the story about many of the GOP governors who are speaking up about the health
about
plan
Medicaid,
as well.
Right.
So we'll do that and we'll continue with the letters. Alan has a whole handful.
Yep.
So we will get to those right after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post making up our panel this morning. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Alan, let's go to some letters and then we'll take a break. We got a whole bunch of other good stuff to discuss here. So,
yeah. Okay. As much as I find it detestable the way Trump disrespects the press, I also find it amusing that he uses professional wrestling, the most fake venue in the world, to put mm-hmm. his alleged toughness on display, the perfect characterization of our glorious leader in action. And that's from Larry. Okay.
I love that letter, Larry. Thank you.
Great letter. Connie says, please don't say if someone gets hurt or killed because of DT's rhetoric. There has been a huge increase in violence and hate crimes in the U.S., and there have been murders due to the increase in hate because of DT's rhetoric. He needs to be held accountable for this, and that's from Connie.
We did allude to that, but I think we were speaking specifically about reporters and members of the media, but we understand
what you're saying. Connie's point is well taken.
Absolutely, it is a point.
Let's not forget the guy.
Hello, panel. I'm very concerned that Trump is suffering from Alzheimer's or dementia. He is displaying symptoms. Can you discuss how Trump can be screened for this disorder? No. Anybody have any idea?
No. I mean, I think that there was a was it Yale that had the symposium with the mental health professionals recently to 35 or so to talk and the concerns and as to what can be done about that really.
It's not much because they're not allowed to really make a public statement anymore because they got in trouble about
HIPAA
doing that years ago.
And HIPAA.
Yeah. All right, HIPAA. But nobody's looking at his health files.
Yeah.
They're making conjecture about his mental health.
I'm worried about his tax files.
Yeah.
Those are the files that I want to see.
Well, of course, because it's the Russians. It's the Russians. They used to say it's the economy stupid. I'm telling you, it's the Russians. I don't want to call anybody stupid. But it's the Russians. That's what it's about. That's where he was... Well, that's where.
But we still don't know what it is about the Russians.
That's correct.
You can surmise, but we don't know.
But do you have one about the tax returns? We would know a lot more then.
And we do have at least one of his children. He had to take it back when they found out what he said, that they had gotten all the money they needed from the Russians for their projects. Mm-hmm.
And I just cannot get over Eric Trump Foundation siphoning money off of money that was supposed to go to St. Jude's Hospital. I'm sorry, I just can't get
it. I didn't even know about that one.
It's a little distraction, but I can't get over that. That's just...
I didn't even know about that one. Could you explain it a little bit?
So the Eric Trump Foundation is... they've been raising money for St. Jude's Hospital for years. It gets a lot of acclaim for that. That's lovely. Millions of dollars have gone to the hospital. But it's now been... shown that, and he talked always about all the money is just directly goes to them. Well, in fact, all of the money doesn't go to the hospital because they use Trump facilities, and so they pay themselves, even though he had said all the money goes directly to. So a disproportionate Forbes. Check out this article in Forbes magazine about this. So a disproportionate amount of the money raised goes back to the Trump facilities that host these events, and they basically use them as a marketing tool to market their facility for other charities to use.
And Chet says, New Jersey beaches have been closed due to a failure to pass a budget, yet Governor Christie and his family were flown in by helicopter to a New Jersey beach to enjoy the uncrowded beach. Now, there's an official place that they can be. Meantime, they are keeping the teeming masses away from the beaches because he is being intransigent.
At what cost to the New Jersey coffers as well. But the interesting bigger part of that story is that there are now 9-10 states that didn't meet their July 1st deadline to get their budgets passed. And this is even before the Trump Medicaid cuts and before all of the impact of all these other budget cuts. This is evidence besides the whole New Jersey specific problem. There's a larger problem with the economies of these states that are really going to be in economic trouble.
I don't know. Christie had the lowest, last time I looked, had the lowest approval rating of anybody in the United States.
Yeah, he doesn't care anymore.
And it's got to be going lower all the time. Panel, if Trump were to be impeached prior to completing his first term and VP Pence takes over as president, would Mike Pence be eligible to run for president for 2 terms following the period that he serves the remainder of Donald Trump's term? That's an interesting question. Yes. I think the answer is yes. Harry Truman, you may remember. But Harry Truman, you will remember, was eligible to run for that again, yet again, because he took over right as soon as Roosevelt took over. But we'll have to look that one up, and we will do our homework, and we'll be back to you. Right, Teresa? Okay.
I don't know if I can find that, but I'll
okay, try. Okay.
One more.
Richard, if Trump... Oh, we did that. Well, that's the one. We did that one.
I'll do another one.
Okay. And Brian...
A bonus letter.
Libby, prior to becoming president, Ronald Reagan was a governor of one of the largest states and president of the Screen Actors Guild.
You said that.
Yeah, he went from being a leftist to a
conservative. Please do not compare Trump to President Reagan.
Okay. Well, I don't think we were. We were only, in fact, we were.
We were talking about the celebrity factor.
We were showing the differences, okay. Yes.
And to clean the palate, I'll read another one.
Okay, well, I got to take a break.
Okay, go ahead, take a break.
All right, Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post. Making up the panel, we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. In the meantime, let's go to news. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning, the day before the 4th of July, which would make it the 3rd of July.
Yes.
Well,
that's the way it works.
Thank you. Thank you for all of you keeping score at home. That's how it works. Well, so let's we want to get into a couple of stories, and then we've got a whole bunch of letters, and we'll get to those, too. So an Afghan female robotics team risked lives to apply for a U.S. visa, but they were denied. This story comes out. An all-female team from Afghanistan hoping to take part in an international robotics competition has been denied entry visas to the U.S. The six-strong high school team had applied for a one-week visa to accompany their robot to Washington, D.C. to take part in the first Global Challenge International Robotics Competition in July. The team twice made the perilous 500-mile journey from the western city of Herat to the American Embassy in Kabul, not far from a recent suicide bombing that left 90 dead to no avail. The team had already experienced setbacks in obtaining the equipment and materials needed to build the ball-sorting robot, with vital parts sent by competition organizers only cleared by customs 3 weeks ago, while other teams had months to prepare.
And is that the same country that we're sending our troops into right now?
Right. We're sending 5,000 more troops and six girls on a robotics team we won't let into our country for a week. My goodness. Okay.
They look like a threat, right? Don't they?
They
look
do.
At the,
oh,
look at those
my goodness.
Kids.
I think
they
that, you know, I
want to... We're going to be worried about them, boy.
Yeah. Here is, okay, here's where you have a chance, all of our listeners, to exercise your... democracy, exercise in democracy. Here's where you can contact the State Department and say, let them compete. Let these girls in. This is absolutely stunning. It's not right, and it's not strategic. It's how do you say no to six girls who had the wherewithal to prepare for and want to come here and compete? What threat are six young girls from Afghanistan who want to compete in a robotics
also, I can tell you what threat they are. They're a threat to him and his what he sees is he's intelligent and he can't do that. And they're from Afghanistan and they're evil. It doesn't matter who they are.
These girls need to be allowed in. This is a
which
mark.
Is not part of the travel ban, right? Afghanistan not part of the travel ban.
No, but this goes to
this
Alan's point.
This is why we're just not letting... This
goes to your point of what kind of world is your granddaughter going to grow up in?
Right. What does it say when these... I mean, there was a story yesterday, I guess it was, about a doctor who was studying, was it in Rhode Island? But now he's gone to Canada because he can't get back in and out of the country. But these are young high school girls. Contact your senators. Contact the State Department. This has got to be changed. What does it say to the people of Afghanistan the U.S. is afraid to allow six high school girls into our country to compete in a robotics competition?
Well, we clearly don't care what it says, right?
Right. No,
but
don't.
We should care.
Well, I agree with you, but
I mean, this may sound ridiculous, but this is the kind of thing that foments generational hate against us. This is the kind of thing that makes people hate Americans.
Not to mention the fact that this is obviously robotics science in general is a male-dominated mm-hmm. profession, but mm-hmm. especially so in Afghanistan. In the, yep. And you have this, mm-hmm. you have this group, and why you would shut that down?
This is the kind of thing. If President Obama was still president, he would be.
He'd have them at the White House.
Have them at the White House. Michelle Obama would be. And that's what I was thinking. Wouldn't it be great if Michelle Obama offered to be their chaperone and to come into the, you know, let them come in.
Well, that would be a clear denial.
I'll chaperone them.
But not only does this foment the hate on the other side of the world in Afghanistan, it foments hate here. It foments misogyny here. It foments hate of Muslims and Muslim women here. I mean, this is a two-way street, and it reinforces the hate of the 30 to 35% who think Trump is God.
And this is really a wonderful competition. The U.S. First competition was put together by an innovator. His name is Dean Kamen. And he really felt that we have to be as excited about our STEM, science, technology, engineering, math students as we are about our basketball players. And not that he doesn't like, you know, sports teams. But let's have robotics, science, engineering put in a venue like a sports venue. And this has grown up. Actually, this area, I think it was Shenandoah was one of the original first six teams in America that did this because of some folks at GE and RPI. But this has grown to thousands of teams from all over the country. And now for the first time, that they're not just doing this in individual countries, but they're having this global competition.
And now I have to read a bulletin.
Letting them in?
Pence running for two terms.
Oh.
It would depend on when he took office as president. 22nd Amendment would allow two more terms if VP serves less than 2 years of a previous term, or a total of 10 years max. Trubert was grandfathered as amendment passed when he was president, and that's for Maureen. Thank you, Maureen. Very, very good.
Thank you, Maureen. Yeah. Very helpful. Okay, I'll stop my rant.
Back to work.
Please.
We know we got the point.
Engage.
We got the
contact the State Department and the White House.
Who are they
going to
contact at the State Department since nobody's working there?
No, call the general number.
But you write it to your White House. Telegram your senators. Do we still have telegrams?
No, but you can
email.
Go to my Twitter and retweet my tweet.
Yeah. You don't have to, yeah.
Okay, Peter points out a deadpan comedian named Pat Paulson, I remember
ran
for president via the Smothers Brothers show in 1968, satirically pointing out the terrible choices facing voters at the time. Humphrey, a good man, compromised by association with LBJ. And Tricky Dick Nixon, he wasn't the serious candidate, but he made a point. That's Pat Paulson. Tricky Dick was a serious candidate, and he won.
Mm-hmm.
Dear panel, Alan is half right. These tweets are a tactic. The real strategy is to limit our First Amendment rights by attacking legitimate media. Weren't you the ones who introduced us to the dictator's playbook? Get rid of the free press is step one. He can't lose. Incremental suppression of the media, introduction of violence, distraction of work on suppressing the vote with his commission, danger. That's from Maureen, but I have to say, Maureen, he can lose. He can lose. People have to be very vigilant.
You know what's interesting is, I don't know if any of you watched Rachel Maddow Friday night in her first 20 minutes.
No.
He has not gone after her. And I find that interesting.
He doesn't consider her a threat.
Really?
No.
He considers Mika and Joe more of a threat?
Yes.
I mean, she has the number one rated show on cable television.
I think it's a ratings thing for him and Mika.
Yeah, but she's speaking to her constituency, which he doesn't hope to win over. But Mika and Republican congressman from Florida, Joe Scarborough, ex-congressman, that's hits him where it hurts.
But they helped get him elected. I mean, a friend of mine,
Peter Dreyer,
he's at Occidental. Yeah. He wrote a piece in Huffington Post this weekend about, you know, they're complicit in this, too. They helped him get elected.
Without question.
But Trump tweeted again this morning, an anti-press tweet.
Nancy says, just wait for if and when Republicans control enough states to rewrite the Constitution. Nancy said that. Could be. Anything's possible. So for weeks we heard how Trump assassination theater and Griffin holding up his severed head was art. We've seen celebrating. We've seen celebrities go ape during ape dung for his assassination. I haven't heard that, by the way. His execution is impeachment. Has anybody heard about execution?
No. I think that the Kathy Griffin thing was roundly condemned as totally inappropriate.
But I think somebody, one of the letters, made the connection between what Kathy Griffin did and what Trump just did with CNN.
Well, first of all, she's not president.
Sean's point is he is a voice on the other side. You see, that's the point. So he's making some of this up. But for 2 years, we've heard, when I say making it up, he's putting it out of proportion. Some jerk may say something
like
that.
False equivalency.
Yeah, it is. For 2 years, we've heard the media put him in the entertainment section, said he had no chance to win the Republican nomination. All the media showing? All of it? Now everyone bugging on his mini world wrestling theatric cheese, says Sean.
Well, that's a point of view that a lot of people hold. Not a lot of people, but 20-some percent of the people.
By the way, we wouldn't have focused on the wrestling had he not tweeted it out.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning. If I may divert you from the Trump thumping for a moment or two, it may remind you that tomorrow not only commemorates our Declaration of Independence from England, two other important events in our path to freedom. First, the Battle of Gettysburg that ended in the hopes of the Confederacy to win. Second, the surrender of Vicksburg that split the Confederacy in two. Lincoln said when he first heard that victory, "The Father of Waters now flows unvexed to the seas." He did have a way with words. Finally, July 4th, 1976 was the date of the Entebbe rescue, when the Israeli army rescued 126 people from Uganda airport, one casualty, the commander of the raid, the brother of the present Prime Minister of Israel. I am not certain how to spell his name. Okay, back to thumping, and that's from Bob. "I don't understand how Trump," says Tina, "has gotten away with what he has gotten away with. The press has been pounding on him, something that would be death to any other politician. Please, can someone explain how Trump has gotten this far?"
Well, you know, this is this notion of pounding on him is what his press office keeps saying. But what they miss is that the questioning of him is in reaction to his actions. You know, if his actions were different, just like if his tweets were different, if he was focused on policy in a presidential way, then he wouldn't be getting these criticisms. And, you know, the criticisms are a result of the actions. Actions have reactions. And he tweets out this morning, "At some point, the fake news will be forced to discuss our great jobs, numbers, strong economy, success with ISIS, the border, and so much else." Well, they have talked about the jobs numbers, which in fact are weak. The market is roaring. No one quite understands that, but people do that. And, you know, we'll see about ISIS, and there's no border wall.
"Professional wrestling," says Jesse, "is a wonderful parallel to political circus, and Trump undoubtedly sees himself as using the same dramatics." That goes a long way to answering, by the way, the question, the last one. "Modern wrestling in particular is a bit like a muscle-based soap opera. Also works the everyman appeal. He's ever focused about ratings and appearance, just like pro wrestling. Agree with Alan about his contrived nature and believing his playing to the base will keep him winning. Will the rest of the country show up to vote? We'll see. Jess in Albany." And Ben says, "George W., presidential, have you forgotten the devastation created by him and Cheney in Iraq? The 100,000 killed and wounded?"
Well, I just said that one speech, the 9/11 speech, was very presidential.
Right, but so definitely I didn't agree with his policies.
But he didn't.
He struggled with grammar. And
pretzels.
And a lot of other things. But he respected the office.
Right.
I mean, I think that's the difference. He understood the basic tenets of our democracy. So we had very different policy views and political views. And I think, you know, for more than a generation, we'll pay the price of his mistake and misstatements about the Iraq War. But he did respect the office of the president.
Issue. That is the bottom line issue, is the respect for the presidency, respect for the office. And the way Trump is acting, it is clear that he has no respect for it because he doesn't understand it.
And he didn't try to cash in on the office in a way that Trump and his family is doing. And
everything's,
you know, certainly his grammar was garbled, but he filled the, you know, he staffed the offices.
"Panel, I will fly my American flag upside down until he leaves office to demonstrate my concern. Rick in Needham. I've also written a protest song, The New Trump Blues." Susan says, "The Washington Post reported that an injured eagle had been found in the nation's capital Saturday. It was unable to fly, appeared lethargic, and had labored breathing. It was brought to animal rehab. Do you think this poor eagle is a metaphor of our injured democracy?"
Susan. I tweeted about that one, yeah.
And then Mark, of course, who could, takes a shot. "Alan is incorrect regarding Truman's presidency in the 22nd Amendment. It was first adopted during his presidency and by its terms did not apply to the current president. Also, Truman had only one elected term. The amendment would permit Pence to run twice if he served less than 2 years of Trump's terms, but not if he has served more than 2 years. Mark, do you remember the point at which I said, we don't really know, we're going to check on this, and a lot of people wrote in, so stop with the incorrect. Okay, let's move on.
All right, we want to go to a story that Alan sent in our final moments regarding Mike Pence. It's not just Mike Pence. Americans are wary of being alone with the opposite sex. Men and women still don't seem to have figured out how to work or socialize together. For many, according to a new morning consult poll conducted for the New York Times, it is better simply to avoid each other.
That's insane.
Many men and women are wary of a range of one-on-one situations, the poll found. Now, around a quarter think private work meetings with colleagues of the opposite sex are inappropriate. Nearly two-thirds say people should take extra caution around members of the opposite sex at work. A majority of women and nearly half of men say it's unacceptable to have dinner or drinks alone with someone of the opposite sex other than their spouse.
The results show
the extent of which sex is an implicit part of interactions. They also explain in part why women still don't have the same opportunities as men. They are treated differently, not just on the golf course or in the boardroom, but in daily episodes, large and small, at work and in their social lives.
Okay, but let me just say, do we all accept the fact that there is always some sexual tension that exists between men and women ever since the cave people? But what makes human beings so remarkable is our ability to
rise above it.
Rise above it, right. Control those instincts. There's no question, though, that this is a poll, ladies and gentlemen, a poll. This is not somebody's opinion. This is a poll. They go out and they ask everybody, how do you feel about that? Would you be in a room with somebody like that? That's what's so impressive and why I sent you all this piece today, this morning.
I would like to know what the age breakdown is of this, because I can tell you the millennials and, you know, like my son who's 31, that's not, you know, they all work together and they all go out on group dates. I mean, it's not that big of an issue.
Surprising anybody gets married, Libby.
Right, it's true. And so I would like to see what the age range is of the respondents. I know I have to just dig down into it. But, you know, it's this idea that, I can't be with a woman unless my wife is there because I'm not going to be able to control myself. Just it speaks to the base.
No, I don't think it's the control yourself.
Well, that's what Pence said.
I don't think that's what it's about.
I think that's the underlying.
It's the impression of what will happen if I'm caught doing that, that dissuades so many people from doing it.
The impression of what it would, to have dinner with somebody of the opposite sex?
Let me tell you, Libby, we live in a strange country.
Well, yes.
We do. And I have to tell you, it wasn't that long ago that I saw somebody having dinner with somebody who, you know, ordinarily would not be expected to be having dinner with that person. And it turned out, of course, it was the beginning of something. So it does, so sometimes it happens.
You know, I guess it's because it's just so not part of my psyche anymore as a lesbian that, you know, the notion of having dinner with a man does not always turn into something sexual.
Would having dinner with a woman
turn into something sexual. It's another person. And you're having dinner with somebody and that's it.
Can I just repeat once again? Poll. P-O-L-L. Yeah. It was a poll.
Right. So which means it's not necessarily true?
No matter what Libby says, okay, I can go out with anybody I want to, and it's okay. That huge numbers of Americans believe that to be the truth, that they shouldn't.
If that's the case, we're lost cause, and we should just all go back to the caves.
No, it means that you have to continue to improve and continue to get better at this, and to continue to say, "Okay, this is what we have to work out."
Well, then it means that we haven't been able to
not yet
to progress past 1950.
Yes, we have, and I bet it's a lot better now than it was in 1950. I'll bet that.
Well, let's stop there because we're out of time. But it sounds like a fine place to stop. We are.
Really?
My thanks to Alan and Teresa and Libby. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.